Welcome to the Talent Development Hot Seat, a show where I interview business executives, talent development professionals, and thought leaders to find out what has been successful and challenging in the world of talent development. My objective is to share ideas, valuable lessons, tools, advice, and trends. My hope is that all of this will ultimately help you, the listener, expand your knowledge, grow your career, and accelerate your success as a talent development professional. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Talent Development Hot Seat. I am your host, Andy Storch, and I am so grateful that you are joining me today for a conversation with my friend, Christopher McCormick. And Christopher is a talent management advisor working with the business and region HRBP leads and business leaders at HP Personal Systems, 3D Print, and CTO/HP Labs to identify talent and organization performance requirements and execute solutions. Christopher drives core talent strategies, initiatives, programs, and processes across the organization and serves as the voice of the business back to the broader talent learning and diversity teams and go-to resource for all talent and organizational performance solutions. Prior to joining HP, Christopher worked at Bank of America and Starbucks, and he now lives in lovely San Francisco, where I used to live as well. Christopher, great to have you. Welcome to the Talent Development Hot Seat.
Thanks, Andy.
Awesome to have you on. I think we actually connected over LinkedIn a couple of years ago and then kept in touch. And I was lucky enough to meet you for a drink last time I was in San Francisco and get to know each other better. And I know you've been doing some really interesting things at HP and have a fantastic career. And of course, when you come on, everything you talk about is, of course, from your own perspective, you know, not representing any beliefs of the organization. But good to have you to talk about your experience. So speaking of that, I wonder if you could start with a little bit of your background and share how you got to where you are today.
Wow. Okay. Well, I sort of just fell into it, this profession. I didn't take the natural path. So I grew up doing theater. I did my first professional theater gig when I was 6 years old. So I grew up singing, dancing, acting. I went to a very prestigious conservatory for theater. My actual degree is in musical theater with a minor in dance and directing. So not your natural path to org design and talent development and HR. But I was literally, I was in Wichita, Kansas. I was supposed to be there for 3 months to do this show, a regional production. And it actually got extended for a year. It was the longest musical in Wichita theater history. Wow. And after the third month, I decided, well, I'm only doing, you know, this night gig, so I'll get a day job. So I started working at a bank, which ended up eventually being Bank of America. And I started working in their contact center and call center, and I was a manager there. And then I started getting really interested in training. And so we went through the merger between Nations Bank and Bank of America. And at that time, we were going to open a new call center in Las Vegas. And I had done a lot of training of new systems and through mergers and acquisitions. And so they asked me to move to Vegas to help open this call center. And so I started into HR as in the training and development world in contact centers and call centers. So I moved to Vegas. And since I had a performing background, I could do my training gig during the day and then some Vegas shows at night, which was really kind of cool for a while.
I was going to say, what better place to be than either like New York or Las Vegas if you're trying to do those shows on the side?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So where did you go from there? How did you develop your career from that point? Because I imagine, I don't know if you're still doing shows, but I know you've moved into a pretty successful role, moving through different companies in this
Yeah. Market. Yeah, the travel schedule doesn't really allow for a lot of performing these days, but I still love it, still a passion of mine, love being a patron of the arts, if you will. But after Vegas, I moved to Phoenix and was working in our card operations group, managing the training team for that. And then ultimately, I ended up in Seattle with Bank of America at the time and was managing a contact center there of about 230 people. I did that for about 2 years. And then the training team and the HR team came knocking on my door after about probably 18 months and said, hey, we're about to do this big initiative. We'd really love for you to join the team. And so I actually ended up doing a major culture overhaul at the time, doing a lot of work around org design, org structure, culture, recognition, and rewards. And so started to get into the bigger picture of HR and how org design and org development and talent development and learning and development can all kind of find this nice harmonious blend, and started working on, you know, global projects at that point in my career. Did some program management at that point in time, ended up leading some teams of training teams that were helping do large scale efforts at that point in time as well. And then eventually, after kind of my flagship, what I call project at Bank of America, which was converting all of the systems on the West Coast, so Washington, Idaho, Oregon, California, which they had delayed since the Nations Bank and Bank of America merger. They had delayed it for over 10 years, integrating the systems with all the other systems in the company. Took that technology project. It was a huge, huge visibility project for the company. Did a, you know, lot of work. It was a 2-year-long project, lots of resources, lots of challenges, lots of change involved from a change management perspective. Loved doing that. And by the time I got through with that, I was really thinking, okay, I think it's time for me to look at other places. I've only worked at Bank of America. So what else is out there? And given I lived in Seattle, Starbucks was a natural company to think about and look to. And I had some friends that worked there. And so ended up moving over there for about 3 years. Loved it. It was great. There was a lot of great organizational design folks, a lot of really talented folks who knew the talent space really well, knew the learning and development space really well, and obviously a company that's willing to take risks. You know, if you think about the approach that they've had, even in some of the turmoil that they've had in the media, to be able to, you know, take the stand that they're going to shut their doors and they're going to train and remediate employees and really get them up to speed about what their culture is and what they stand for. That sends, I think, a huge message to their level of wanting to serve the customer in the right way, but also empowering and enabling their employees to do that.
Yeah, you're referring to the recent incident they had where they threw a couple of people out of a store. And the way Starbucks responded to that was actually by saying they're going to close their doors and train everybody in the company on culture and diversity and inclusion, which was just amazing from my standpoint, you know, knowing the importance of this, but also how much money, revenue that they are turning down by having the doors closed for just 2 hours during the time of the
day. Even if you think, I work in technology now, so if you think about net promoter score or customer satisfaction score, you think, what does that do to your loyalty programs and the people who want to be in your stores and use them as their offices? You know, what does that do from that perspective? And they were willing to take that risk.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, from a cultural perspective, you know, think about the former CEO and the founder, Howard Schultz. I mean, he's always been very bold in putting his opinions out there and standing up for what he believes in and then pushing the organization to do the same thing, which is, you know, pretty interesting. It's always been an interesting organization to follow.
He is definitely bold. I've sat in some meetings with him and sat across the table, and he's never shy about his point of view.
That's fascinating. And what a great opportunity to have to be in the room with him. I mean, one of the kind of iconic CEOs of the 21st century, if you will, that we've, you know, come to know, many of us in business world. But you eventually moved on and you moved over to HP, where you are now. So tell us, what are you doing now with HP in San Francisco?
Yeah, at the time I was really looking to, I've always wanted to live in the Bay Area. I was here for a conference while I was at Starbucks, and I was walking around the city and I was like, if not now, when? So I took the leap of faith, landed a job in the Bay Area, ended up moving here. HP was in the middle of splitting. So if you think about the former HP, 300,000 people, is now two companies. So there's HPI, which I work for, and then there's Hewlett Packard Enterprises. And so I joined HPI right at the split between the two companies. Great time to join. Really re-looking at everything. Everything was on the table. What are we going to do? Are we going to keep these programs? Are we going to keep this process? Are we going to reinvent? Are we going to innovate? We're going to think about it differently. So I got to come in when kind of all things were up for grabs or able to be renegotiated on how we were going to move forward. So that was a really exciting time to join the company. And it's been a really exciting journey to work through as we have thought about how are we going to approach this and what are we going to do differently. And we've done some really, really cool things along the way. So, you know, one of the things people constantly ask are, you know, what are some trends you're seeing in the market and what are some things that you're seeing happening? One of the things that we did in our first year was do away with performance ratings. And so there's no more formal performance ratings or end of year rating, which was a big deal for an engineering company that's all about precision and rating and being able to measure every little aspect of things. So it was a big change management effort, but also understanding where we wanted to move the culture and where we wanted to think about who we wanted to be 5 years from now. It didn't make sense to keep the same old model that we had worked through. So,
but still, that's such a big undertaking and also something that I imagine had been around for a long time. And I know a lot of organizations are moving towards this. I've talked to several people from Gap on to smaller companies that are doing this, but it's not easy. So how did you make this happen? How did you, get rid of that performance review?
Well, we looked at, we did a lot of work and actually had a thought partner at the time with the Neuro Leadership Institute, who has done a lot of work with other companies as well in the same space. I actually had worked with them at Starbucks and worked with them then at the beginning of our HP journey. We actually think about the SCARF model, if you're familiar with the SCARF model, which is status, certainty, autonomy, relatedness, and fairness. Those are the SCARF is the SCARF piece. And if you think about the SCARF model, it's really around helping eliminate the threat that could happen for somebody if they're driven by status, if they're driven by certainty, if they're driven by autonomy, if they're driven by relatedness or fairness. How do you remove as much of the threat as possible that's there? And there's a natural tendency in our brains and how we think and react and respond and behave that is more geared toward threat. We get in threat state much more quickly than we get in a toward or reward state. Yeah. And so we really had to think about what is the change management around the SCARF model. And we use that as a framework to help build out our change management plans and routines and thinking through everything. And to be honest, I would say, it took some time. We didn't get it perfect out of the gate. I think a lot of managers, when they're going through that kind of change or shift, then they look for other things around, okay, well, how do we calibrate this? And so we'll use the 9 boxes as shadow rating, which is just goes against everything that we are trying to get rid of, right? So helping coach and guide people through where their tendency is to go to what they know and try and find something to replace, being able to coach and counsel and ensure that we're actually getting rid of ratings. We're using the 9 box framework to talk about potential. And it's about where we're going to invest around development opportunities and movement and rotations within different parts of the organization around roles and scope. So making sure that they were clear in the delineation between what it was a performance rating and how do we use these other tools that are part of the talent process to assess where we need to make investments or where we need to broker movement in the organization.
Yeah. So interesting that you talked about fear and this SCARF model, which I hadn't heard of, but you think about biology and history. I mean, humans are essentially made to respond to threats, right? Yep. And since none of us are really running from lions or dinosaurs anymore, right? We respond to the threats that are around us in the workplace, which someone's taking away my freedom. Someone is taking away my weekend or my autonomy or less leadership or, authority or whatever it is. And like, how can we address that so that people don't feel less threatened?
Yeah. And the research tells us that the greatest threats are actually social. In today's society, they're totally social. You're not going to the end of the cave and saying, do I eat today or do I get eaten?
Right.
Right. You really are going into a meeting and going, am I being included? Are they listening to me? And is my opinion valued? And why didn't I get invited to that offsite to help with the leadership strategy for next year? All of that starts to become the, am I worthy enough or important enough to get a seat at that table.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me of a couple of things. One, I mean, for anybody who follows Tony Robbins, I'm a fan. And one of the things he talks about is that everybody kind of has two core fears, and every fear goes back to these fears of, am I good enough? Mm-hmm. Relates to the ultimate fear, which is, will I be loved? And, you think about, will they have that seat at the table? Am I good enough? Am I included? People care about me. And I've also seen research that shows, it's an interesting study where they interviewed leaders, managers, and said, what are the things that you're, from a benefits perspective, what do your people care the most about? And they'll rate, salary as number one. And then you go and ask the people, And being an insider is often like top one or two. Like, am I included? Am I part of, you know, what's going on? Do they tell me what's going on? Do I feel like I'm, you know, I'm part of the purpose, part of the business? So you're giving people sort of seat of the table as you're building this.
Yeah. And understanding what their drivers are. So in the framework of the SCARF model, if you think about the fear or threat, right? For Andy, who may be driven by status, and that's your driver, but somebody else on my team may be driven by fairness, I might need to differentiate the way in which I communicate change, that I grow and develop people on my team, that I think about how you want to be grown and developed, and what opportunities might be there for you based on what's driving you. And then I also have to think about the collective of the team to think through, how do I make sure I'm weighing in on all of those aspects, so that no matter if there's just one person on my team who's all about autonomy and there's four people about relatedness, I'm making sure that I'm being as inclusive of a leader as possible.
Awesome. I like how it's very contextual to the people involved.
This episode of the Talent Development Hot Seat is sponsored by Advantage Performance Group. Advantage is the first place to call when you need leaders to lead, sellers to sell, and your business to flourish. At Advantage, we offer creative learning solutions that can help accelerate leadership development, business acumen, sales performance, and business results. Our clients say we're imaginative, collaborative, insightful, and fun. For more information, visit advantageperformance.com/hotseat or call us at 415-925-6832. Again, that website is advantageperformance.com/hotseat. And now back to the show.
Christopher, in all you've worked on and developed over your career, what's one thing that you're really proud of? What's your most successful thing that you've done so far?
Oh, man. So there are a couple of highlights that I'll speak to, and I'll give some recent examples. So there's a program that we have developed with, based on a strategic location around growing leaders and growing innovative leaders. And so we're working with a partnership that I helped build with National Taiwan University, and we're doing that in our Taipei, Taiwan office. And every year we have a new cohort where we're assessing them, we're putting them in this program that's a 9-month program, giving them some self-leadership tenets, how to lead teams, how to lead change, and then how to lead business. And based on those tracks, then they also get introduced to business challenges about halfway through that program. And they have executive sponsors who then help guide and coach them through their business challenge. And at the end of the program, they have to present their recommendations to the executive team to say, here's the challenge you gave us. Here's what we learned in the program. Here's how we applied what we learned in the program. And here's our recommendations for what you could do. And we did our test and pilot last year, and the first business challenge team that won their business challenge, the work and recommendations that they made are actually being implemented into the business. So there's a whole decision point that they've made a recommendation around that's actually being used. It's now part of the business. It's helped create efficiencies and cost. So seeing that kind of real life learning happening and people being able to apply it quickly, it actually having an impact on the business, has been really cool. It's cool to watch when that's a perfect storm when that happens.
Yeah. Awesome. That's really cool. Were there any other, cause you mentioned you had a couple that you wanted to share. Were there any other accomplishments that you wanted to share that you're really proud of?
I mentioned the one with the California Northwest transformation effort with Bank of America. Again, that was a 2-year, probably the most challenging and complex project I've ever worked on in my life. And the fact that the executive team called it flawless execution. It wasn't flawless execution, but they said it was, but in the background there, it was a lot of that duck paddling underneath the water. It was a big challenge. It was a heavy lift. And there was a real sense of pride and satisfaction at the end of it, because we really did do what we set out to do, and we did it even better than what we thought we could do it. So. Awesome. That was pretty incredible.
Yeah, and you didn't let them see all the craziness that was going on in the background.
What craziness? I don't know. There was no craziness.
No craziness. Just ducks paddling in the water. I like it.
Yeah.
So you've had a lot of successes throughout your career and a lot of things to be proud of. But I have to ask, what's one of your biggest failures or mistakes? Something that just did not go the way you expected, and what did you?
Yeah, a few years ago, I asked for a stretch opportunity. I had done business partner work previously. So from a generalist and an HRBP perspective, I'd done that kind of work throughout my career in some capacities. And so I wasn't new to that, but I had asked to be given that opportunity while I still had my, what I'll call day job. So I was asking for a full-time job in addition to, probably not the best idea I ever had. While I learned a lot, I will say that there's something to be said, I think, for knowing what your company's size and scale is. I think that if you're a startup and you have somebody that you're bringing in as a developer, they can do hardware development, they can do software development, they can do firmware, they could do security, because they're so small and they could be such a generalist and broad, and they're so in the startup mode. I think for an HR person, like in a startup, that's probably a possibility for you to be the comp person, to be the benefits person, to be the talent learning person, to be the HR business partner, to play that role in smaller organizations and be that huge where you have to go broad. When you get into complex organizations of scale and size, you really do need your specialists. And I think it's important to know that you need those specialists, because you do bring a level of expertise that if you get too stretched out, you don't get to go where your strengths are and where you're best used. Yeah. And I felt like in that year that I was doing both the talent management piece and the HRBP piece, I didn't have the opportunity to fully lean in where my strengths are. And I felt like I was getting pulled away from them oftentimes. And so I asked for that assignment. I learned a lot from that assignment. I would probably still do that. I would probably do it differently and contract differently in that conversation, just to be clear and have a little bit more clarity. But it was not like I did not win that. Like, yeah. Wow, that was an accomplishment that I feel like, yeah, I did a really great job of. I feel like I survived it.
Yeah, well, when you take on too much, then we get stretched, and you're not going to be excellent at anything you do. You're just going to be thriving with a lot of the things you do, right? And that's just that's natural, right? And I know for me, as an entrepreneur, independent consultant, I'm out there. I'm just always taking on a bunch of different things, and that can happen to anybody. So, but good, sounds like it was a good learning experience.
Certainly, but I would certainly say that I would do it differently.
Yeah,
in hindsight.
Christopher, what challenges are you dealing with today? What's the biggest challenge for you in your role and your business?
There's some infrastructure challenges I find that we're trying to solve for, and we're actually getting ready to solve for them, which is really cool. So the challenge has been, how do we have these conversations, these meaningful talent review conversations, talent management conversations, think about people's careers? And oftentimes the HRIS system or the people of record system is not able to track those conversations. And so you're managing all these things on spreadsheets, and you've got these in a PowerPoint deck, and you've got this in an Excel, and you've got that, just, messy. And you've got my version of it, and then you've got the HRBP's version of it, and then you've got the actual leader of the person's version of it. And so there's all this stuff sitting out there that I think is great information. We just don't have a really great way of capturing it for the long term. And so we've been working with our HRS provider to evolve that process for the past year and a half. And we're about to implement and be able to track in our HRIS system long-term what those talent conversations were, what succession planning looked like, what talent actions we were going to take, what programs people have completed or that they've been registered for. So I think I don't know that it'll solve all of our problems, but it'll certainly enhance the current process to allow us better access just to the data so that we can generate the insights we need to move forward and think about our talent.
As you develop this new system, you'll get everything integrated into that, and it makes it a lot less clunky than maybe what you're dealing with now.
Yep, totally. And as we think about the future, if I think about the future of HR, and one of the things that I think is critical as a talent management professional is understanding, especially if you're working in a complex organization that's scaled like I do, you have to learn the core, right? No matter who you are, you need to know the core tenets of what a nine box is or what a talent review is or what learning development programs are out there, what adult learning theory is, what different elements that you just have to know around consulting and contracting and being able to, you know, what the Bloom's taxonomy is and what the measurement is. You need to know all of those core tenets just to be able to play in the, and be credible to your business leaders who've been around for a while. But I also think as someone in this space, we have to think about how do we innovate some of the things that we've done to grow. And an example of that I said earlier is, you know, getting away with performance ratings or doing away with performance ratings. We have to think about what's getting in the way of where we want to be as an organization.
I'm glad you talked about the future of HR, because I also wanted to ask you, are there any trends that you're seeing out there in the industry and the marketplace that are really impacting the way you do your work and the way you're setting up programs?
Yeah, there are. If I think about it from our perspective, we would say that there are mega trends. These could be 50 years out that are going to impact the way we're going to do work. So changing demographics is one of those mega trends. Hyper-globalization, rapid urbanization, and certainly accelerated innovation. All of those are sort of those big mega trends. And if we think about the gig worker and how that's going to look, all of those things are coming into play. We used to, you know, for the past decade, we've talked about how do you manage millennials and how do you think about somebody who's mid-career or exiting their career, who's been a senior manager or manager for a long time, who's now managing these people who are much younger than them and think about work differently. It's going to be even different. So if I look at the trends, and I was at an offsite last week and somebody said in 10 years, like 60% of the jobs that we have today will look different or won't even be there. And so if that's the case, like if we think about 10 years, that's not that long. So we're going to have to be, I think, more agile and more nimble and flexible in the way in which we approach what I'll call traditional HR approaches to programs and programmatic elements. Not to say that, again, as I went back, you have to have some of those core tenets of what is adult learning, what are the theories, what are the measurements, and how does that impact the business, and how do those programs or the way in which you look at talent impact. So I think those core elements have to be there, but I think in the way in which they get articulated and translated to the organization and to leaders, and especially to these new folks that are coming into the workforce and how they think of those processes and helping them understand what that's going to look like will be very different. Because it's really interesting to see someone come in and they expect to, you know, to be promoted in 6 months. I've been in this job for 6 months. Mm-hmm. It's 2 years. I should definitely be in a different role in 2 years. Very different mindset and shift in how we have to manage engagement and how we have to manage being inclusive and being who we say we want to be.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, the economy, technology, things are changing so fast. The rate of change keeps growing. And so jobs and businesses have to change as well, right? There's so many things that jobs that are out there now that, you know, 10 years ago wouldn't have existed, like a, you know, social media manager or something like that, right? That's so important for companies now. You know, 10 years ago, I told you that you could make six figures being an Instagram influencer. You'd be like, what are you talking about? What is that, right?
But you're things like are changing all the time. Instagram influencer, yeah.
But things
sign
are
me up for that. Yeah. Yeah. What do you want to be when you grow up? An Instagram influencer. That
a
was
YouTuber,
never on my
list. Right? Yeah, I want to be a YouTuber. Right?
Never was on my list.
You can, right, but things are changing. And I'm glad you brought that up about, you know, younger generation. Typically, we hear that a lot. People have a desire to move up faster. And you can sit around and complain about it, or we can react to it and start to adapt to the younger generations, how they're working, because that is the future of the workforce.
Yep, it is. Absolutely.
Is there any book or TED Talk or anything that has been really influential to you in your career that you recommend to others?
Yes, of course. And there's several. So one is Peter Block's Flawless Consulting. I think the way in which he describes what it is to contract upfront is critical when you're in a strategic HR function and you're working with a leadership team or executives where it's important and imperative that you come in and you're able to really articulate what your wants are. So if I go to an executive for a talent review, I start with what I want to get out of this is blah, X, Y, and Z. And then I turn the table and say, what do you want to get out of it? But I come in with a point of view that allows me to articulate that based in that model very clearly. And it's not like I'm throwing my ideas on that person. I'm also being collaborative and asking them what they want to get out of it. But it starts a conversation in a much really dynamic way that a lot of executives and leaders aren't used to. So I find it to be highly useful. So I love Blocks Flawless Consulting. I love Brené Brown. So any YouTube or TED Talk that Brené Brown has is on my list. Christy Smith, who's no longer at Deloitte, but was at Deloitte when she did the TED Talk around covering or uncovering in the workplace. She's now Apple's chief diversity officer. So she did a lot of work with Kenji Yoshina on that effort with Deloitte when she was still there. Love that one. Love option B. And also there's a book that came out about a year and a half ago called Inclusion by Jennifer Brown, which if you're in the diversity and inclusion space or in HR space, I find it to be an amazing book that allows you to really get some good change management case studies around how inclusion can show up and what that looks like at an org development and design level. So
interesting.
Those are my plugs for my books and TED Talks.
I like it. A lot of great resources. And speaking of resources, do you have a tool, could be software, technology, something you recommend that helps you be more productive besides, of course, using an HP laptop, printer, and other personal systems?
Yeah. To have a tool, I didn't used to, but I use OneNote a lot now. I'm a traditional kind of journaler. Like I have a notebook and I write down all my notes and I go back and And I keep lists and I write and check them off. And I probably go through so much paper. And so I started to really think about it from just a sustainability perspective. I'm like, wow, I'm killing trees here. How do I, you know, get with it? And so I started to go, you know, and one of my friends was like, don't you use OneNote? I was like, no, I don't use OneNote. What is it?
Yeah.
It kind of like, I knew that it was a Microsoft Office feature. I just had never used it and I didn't really understand it. And he actually showed me how to work it and I've started to adopt it. And it's actually super useful because then I have all my notes and it's electronic. So if I need to copy and paste stuff, I'm not looking at what I wrote down and then having to type it all in. Like I've got a lot of it already documented. So it's just a quick copy paste job. So that's always fun.
I like that one. I've used OneNote a little bit, not enough. I know a lot of people, consultants that swear by it. I've been taking all my notes these days in Google Docs, even though I have the Office suite. I just like that it's easily available in the cloud everywhere I go. Mm-hmm. But I do find that, for instance, I'm taking notes right now in one document that has a long flow of show notes. It starts to get slow to load when it has like 50 pages of notes.
You might need a new note.
Might need it, right? I know it might be time to start a new one. OneNote allows you to do that, right? Have all the places. And I also keep a journal, and I find that there's something really effective about writing things down, you know, in the morning. Yep. And I also think it's funny that you think that you as an individual have an impact on the amount of like paper that is used and the trees that are being killed out there, because there are probably companies using a lot more, although not nearly as much as we used to, right?
It's rough. Yeah. Well, I also work for a print company, so print everything.
Of course.
Yeah. So it just was one of those, you know, kind of aha moments of how can I be more efficient and more productive? And so that's sort of one of the things that I took on.
Definitely. Last question for you, Christopher. What advice do you have for someone who's moving into a new talent development role or just trying to up their game and become a more successful talent development professional?
I would say expand your network as much as possible. Get to know people who do this type of work in different industries. Go to whatever local, for some, it might be an ASTD meeting in your local chapter of ASTD. For others, it might be a university that has an alumni for organizational psychology. For other, but find your network, use them, leverage them. You know, there's professionals out there like you and I met on LinkedIn and had several connections, but over the course of time, we've chatted back and forth, we've met in person, we've had conversations. I think those types of things where you are seeking out other people who are, have an expertise or maybe have a lens or maybe have a, an experience or perspective mm-hmm. that's different from your experience will make you a better talent professional. So the more you have a broad network and can leverage it and use that to your advantage, do it.
Yeah. Absolutely. I love that. I'm big on networking and relationships. You know, I'm on LinkedIn all day, Facebook, social media, but I also go to conferences. Love connecting with people. And that's one of the reasons why I started this podcast. I mean, from a selfish standpoint, it allows me to have conversations with people I might not normally have. And then also from a value and giving standpoint, I know that there's a lot of talent development professionals that are hungry to learn what others are doing. Like, what is Christopher McCormick doing at HP? Well, now you have this information out there. Or you share some of your stories, and we have other people sharing their stories as well. With that in mind, for anybody that wants to get in touch with you, wants to connect, what's the best way for them to connect with you, Christopher?
Via LinkedIn, absolutely. Shoot me a note, connect with me, happy to chat.
Awesome, so connect on LinkedIn. Christopher, this has been really interesting, really valuable. I appreciate you coming on and sharing your experience, your knowledge, your wisdom. So thanks so much for coming on the Talent Development Hot Seat.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, take care.
Thanks for listening to the Talent Development Hot Seat. If you got value out of this show, please subscribe, leave a review, and share with your colleagues and friends. We want to spread the word and add as much value to the talent development community as possible, and we need your help. As always, you can find more information and connect with me at talentdevelopmenthotseat.com. Take care.